Morning, everyone. Welcome to the Public Safety Commission on this very special day when we broke ground on the DPS Memorial on the next Building A. I want to thank the director and all those who were involved in making this day possible, and we look forward to seeing the monument in its final form. So thank you, Director. And again, there are many people who have had a hand in this. Thank you for all your work in making it possible today. I'm going to call our meeting to order. Roll call, Commissioner Blair.
Here.
Commissioner Stachel.
Here.
Commissioner Wainwright.
Here.
I'm Chairman Mock. A quorum of the Public Safety Commission is present, and the public meeting of the commission is called to order and will now proceed. The time is 10:01 in the morning. The location of this meeting is the Criminal Law Enforcement Auditorium at 6100 Guadalupe, as posted in the agenda. We will now consider the agenda items that have been posted for this meeting. We'll start with Chaplain Furman Carpenter for the invocation. Please rise.
Commissioners, our most holy Heavenly Father, we thank you for your goodness and for your love and for all your blessings. Father, we pray that we'll strive to see those blessings of being able to live in a wonderful state, a good governor, and our legislatures. Father, thank you for them and ask you to be with them. Father, we thank you for our Public Safety Commission. Father, and thank you for their wisdom, Father, and for their guidance. And ask you to be with Chairman Mock, Commissioner Blair, Commissioner Stagio, Commissioner Wainwright. Please watch over them, Father, and help them in the tough decisions and always have courage to make the right decisions. Father, we thank you for the Department of Public Safety, every man and every woman, Father, that serve in the Department of Public Safety, Father, and ask you to be with them, Father, as they continue to serve, their courtesy and their protection that they give to our great state. Please be with our colonel and his command staff and all those they work together to help keep our state safe. Thank you for the wonderful building that they're building to remember our men and women who serve and who gave the ultimate sacrifice for our state, Father, and ask you to continue to be with their families and the building of this building and maybe a great memorial, Father, as we remember those who gave it all. Thank you, Father, for this time, and it's through Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Please remain standing for the pledges given by Trooper Roby Penarts.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Please be seated. Next item on the agenda is item 4, approval of the minutes of the Public Safety Commission meeting held on February 10th of 2022. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Second.
A motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Blair to approve the Public Safety Commission meeting minutes of February 10th, 2022. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Minutes pass. I'll now turn it over to Director McCraw for the presentations. Director.
The following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 30 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Cynthia Fowler, Driver License Division.
Thank you. Sorry. Okay.
Claudia Gann, Crime Records Division. Yolanda Garza, Driver License Division. James Lopez, Office of Inspector General. Asiria Ramon, Driver License Division. The following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 40 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Starlane Riddle, Texas Ranger Division. Lawrence Thomas, Texas Highway Patrol. Thank you.
care who you are.
The Top Trooper competition began in 2012 as a way to recognize outstanding troopers throughout the state. The first Top Trooper contest was held in February of 2012. Trooper Javier Arana Jr. participated in this first competition and did extremely well. The following month, Trooper Arana was tragically killed in the line of duty. As a tribute to his sacrifice, the competition was named in his honor. The 10th annual Javier Arana Jr. Top Trooper competition was held at the Tactical Training Center in February, with 97 troopers from across the state competing in the event. Over the course of the three-day competition, troopers were tested on their driving and firearm skills, physical conditioning and endurance, and job knowledge during 9 events. As a result of this year's competition, Trooper Danny Basie, Highway Patrol Service, Southeast Texas Region, is the top female competitor, and Trooper Mark Cook, Highway Patrol Service, Southeast Texas Region, is the top male competitor. Will the Arana family please come up for photos? On April 8, 2021, an active shooter event occurred at the Kent Moore Cabinets Manufacturing Facility in Bryan. A search for the suspect was initiated by multiple law enforcement agencies, and after the suspect was identified, Trooper Juan Rojas Tovar traveled to the suspect's last known address. As Trooper Tovar arrived at the residence in rural Grimes County, he observed the suspect standing in front of the residence holding a high-powered rifle. Trooper Tovar immediately began backing his vehicle away from the suspect while notifying DPS communications of the situation. The suspect opened fire, which resulted in one of the rounds traveling through the patrol car's windshield and striking Trooper Tovar in the left eye. As Tovar continued to back away from the suspect, he observed an uninvolved citizen between Tovar and the suspect. Trooper Tovar had the presence of mind to wait until the citizen was out of harm's way before returning fire at the suspect. Tovar was able to continue driving backwards for approximately 1/4 mile without crashing his vehicle. Even after being seriously wounded, Trooper Tovar was able to broadcast the suspect's vehicle description and direction of travel, resulting in the suspect being taken into custody a short while later. Additional troopers arrived on the scene within minutes and began providing medical aid to Trooper Tovar. In recognition of his courageous service and personal sacrifice, Trooper Juan Rojas Tovar is hereby awarded the Purple Heart. On December 11, 2021, a one-vehicle crash call was dispatched. Trooper Crystal Cantu located the vehicle parked on the side of the roadway in Hidalgo County. As Cantu approached the vehicle, she learned the right front passenger had sustained a single gunshot wound to her right leg and was bleeding profusely. Trooper Cantu immediately applied her DPS-issued tourniquet, contacted DPS communications, and requested air support. Trooper Oscar Tovar responded to assist Trooper Cantu. Trooper Tovar assessed the injury and decided to apply a second tourniquet. Troopers Eloy Perez and Joaquin Garza arrived on the scene, and as Trooper Garza informed everyone that Willacy County EMS was en route, Troopers Tovar and Perez took turns applying direct pressure to the femoral artery to further safeguard against blood loss. EMS personnel arrived on the scene, and the victim was transported to a hospital in Edinburgh. While the victim's leg had to be amputated, she survived the incident. In recognition of their decisive and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Troopers Crystal Cantu, Oscar Tovar, and Eloy Perez are hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. Thank you. On November 27, 2021, Trooper Nathan Reyes was on patrol in Jim Wells County when he observed a truck parked on the shoulder of US 281 with its hood and doors open. As Trooper Reyes approached, the driver, later identified as Jose Luis Magdaleno, fell out of the pickup and onto the pavement. Reyes discovered Magdaleno had accidentally shot himself in the leg with a pistol. Trooper Reyes picked up Mr. Magdaleno and moved him to a safer location. Trooper Reyes applied a tourniquet to the upper left thigh to prevent additional blood loss. Trooper Reyes attempted to talk with Mr. Magdaleno to keep him conscious. However, when Mr. Magdaleno lost consciousness, Reyes put him in his patrol car and transported him to EMS personnel that were en route to assist. As Trooper Reyes pulled over to meet the ambulance, Trooper Jose Gonzalez stopped to assist. Mr. Magdaleno was removed from the patrol car and placed on the ground, where Trooper Gonzalez placed a second tourniquet and applied direct pressure to stop the bleeding. EMS personnel provided further medical treatment before transporting Mr. Magdaleno to a hospital. He was then flown by helicopter to another facility for additional treatment. Medical personnel indicated that the proper use of the tourniquets by Troopers Reyes and Gonzalez aided in the life-saving efforts of Mr. Magdaleno. In recognition of their decisive and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Troopers Jose Gonzalez and Nathan Reyes are hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. Following is a unit citation. The Border Security Operations Center and the six Joint Operations Intelligence Centers are led by Texas Ranger Division personnel and staffed in cooperation with the Texas Military Department, primarily by Texas State Guard soldiers with support from various National Guard units. The BSOC and the JOICs have excelled through the years, in part by establishing and maintaining exceptional partnerships with the United States Border Patrol and with numerous state and local agencies within DPS's South Texas and West Texas regions. Through sustained effort and commitment, these personnel have deployed and maintained over 5,000 drawbridge cameras from El Paso to Brownsville. These surveillance cameras have been instrumental in providing real-time situational awareness and actionable intelligence for DPS officers, Border Patrol agents, and other officers and deputies from local law enforcement agencies throughout the state. The BSOC and JOICs provide daily logistical and technical support, along with regular training to the thousands of officers and agents who use Drawbridge as a part of their agency's daily operations. The most important components of Operation Drawbridge are the individuals repairing and deploying cameras and those stationed behind computer screens 24 hours a day, monitoring the more than 150,000 images transmitted daily. During this three-year time frame, from September 1st, 2018 to August 31st, 2021, nothing has been more efficient and effective in disrupting smuggling incursions by transnational criminal organizations. The success of Operation Drawbridge is a testament to the quality and tenacity of its personnel and their unwavering support of innovative solutions. I'm going to read a list of the names of the following individuals who are here to represent the BSOC and the JOICS today. It is a long list, so please hold your applause. Otis Burley Lockler, Robert Boatwright, Irma West, Michael Rail Al-Ali, Arthur A.J. Miller, John Johnson, Nicole Sellers, Donald Carter, Yvonne Perrin, Jesus Tejeda, Jose J.R. Villarreal, Harold Baldwin, Jason Greger, Kip Westmoreland, Karen Lodge Hendley, Orlando Salinas, Greg Gosden, Brandy Prince, Joe Cave, Robert Roberts, Sean Cobb, Pamela Webb, Melanie Tisa, Melba Sines, Gerardo Morales, Shailene Busby, Ricardo Cajero, Dustin McIlwain, Carlos Salinas, Francisco Vasquez, and Rene Alvarado. Four of them will be representing in the photos.
As I say at all these commission meetings, and I'll say it again, this is truly the highlight of our commission meetings to celebrate such great service, to recognize those who for valor and for sacrifice. And for all those who've been here for many, many years, we appreciate their service and thank you all for being here today and for their families as well. We know the families are critically important to supporting each and every one of the people that were honored today. Thank you. And have a happy Easter. We will take a 5-minute break and re-adjourn. Thank you. All right. The Public Safety Commission has readjourned after a brief break, and we're in open session with a quorum. Is there any public comment? Anyone in the auditorium wishing to give public comment today? Seeing none, public comment is now closed. I'll turn it over to the director for his report.
Chairman, Commissioners, you heard the governor talk earlier today about, you know, Operation Lone Star and some of the challenges the department has and the state of Texas has. And today we're going to brief just a little bit on Operation Lone Star. But importantly, an important part of it is the Department of Public Safety's Aircraft Operations Division. And I've asked Chief Tim Oxner to come before you and present in terms of the state of the state as it relates to our aircraft capability. It's, of course, it's not just an important capability at the border, but it's important throughout the state for the types of missions that we're involved in, anywhere from life-saving missions, but also in terms of providing a capability to deter and detect and interdict, you know, serial robbery crews, transnational gangs, things of this nature, where it's absolutely essential that you have aircraft operation support. So with that, Chief, turn it over to you.
Good morning. My name is Tim Oxner, Chief Pilot, Texas DPS, and I'm very pleased to be here today to be able to talk to you about my favorite subject, which is DPS aviation. Slide. So there's a saying that humans are more important than hardware, and that's very much the case in DPS aircraft. I'm very proud of our crewmen for their professionalism, their work ethic, their safety record. We have 75 crewmen assigned all over the state. And we're also blessed to have 7 outside tactical flight officers. And these guys come from the police departments of Mesquite, Garland, Lubbock, Amarillo, El Paso, and the Bexar County Sheriff's Office. And they do a great job of augmenting our staffing. I have a 3-person administrative team that do a great job for us. And then we have 3 technicians that we've hired to do the maintenance on our very sophisticated police technology. Because we've determined a long time ago that it's a lot of times it's better to take care of things yourself as opposed to having to outsource it. And they've been able to save us a ton of money, and we've been able to put a lot more emphasis on getting things done in a prompt manner with those technicians. The UAS team I'm going to visit more about later on in the presentation. Slide. This is our current layout. There's 12 stations assigned all over the state. We focus heavily on the border region and the Golden Triangle. Slide, please. Now, I say that humans are more important than hardware, but our hardware is pretty important, too. So these two aircraft are really the workhorses of our fleet. You have the H-125 A-Star on top and the Cessna 208 Caravan on the bottom. We have 14 A-Stars and three Caravans. And these are some of the most technologically advanced aircraft in the country. Do a great job for us. They have infrared cameras, downlink capability, very sophisticated mapping system, and a very good police radio, which is really the main effort for our aircraft. Slide, please. We also have two Pilatus PC-12s. I think some of you have been able to ride in one of these. They are also a very good patrol aircraft, but their real benefit to the division is their ability to, they can fly higher, 30,000 feet, 300 miles an hour. All-weather aircraft can respond anywhere in the state in less than 2 hours, and once they're there, be on station for 6 to 8 hours. So it's a very capable aircraft. Slide. We have two twin-engine aircraft, the EC-145 helicopter on the left and the King Air 350 on the right. The EC-145 can do anything that the patrol aircraft can do, but it's really its big emphasis that we have is its ability to insert 4 to 6 man tactical SWAT teams, which gives us a lot of mobility, especially along the border and our urban built-up areas. The King Air is also very, it's our men and equipment hauler, can go anywhere in the state rapidly in an hour and a half. And what's really good about it is it can haul 8 fully equipped SWAT guys with all their equipment anywhere and go anywhere in the state with plenty of fuel.
Slide. Would you also speak to the use of aircraft for the COVID response?
Yes, sir. So during the COVID response, we established a DPS FedEx operation utilizing our Caravans, our PC-12s, the King Air. We hauled first test kits all over the state, especially to the remote areas that had a hard time receiving them. And then as the vaccine came out, we delivered that as well. Thousands of vaccines and test kits.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. So next, I'd like to highlight some of the equipment we use. It, like I said, it's some of the most advanced technology in the country. To the left, you'll see a mapping system that's overlaid on our IR camera. That mapping system allows us to use pinpoint accuracy, which helps us get to the scene of the crime, scene of the missing person. It shaves off minutes and seconds, which can mean a lot in a pursuit, manhunt, missing kid, that kind of situation. In the middle there, you see our console of the police radios. Each helicopter is equipped with four police radios, and each radio has the capability of multiple zones. So at any one time, our crews can be scanning 40 to 50 different agencies, which is a great asset, especially in the complex areas of the border and the urban areas. Slide, please. So our night vision goggles, we began those in 2006. That's when we implemented that program, and that's probably one of the best things we ever did. It's really increased our safety and our effectiveness. Today, each crewman is assigned a set of night vision goggles, and it really has improved our safety record through the years. Slide. So the thermal camera, this asset really helps us out. We have an MX-10 Westcam camera that's affixed to every helicopter, and then the MX-15 is affixed to every fixed wing. And this allows us to work at higher altitudes, which is much safer for the crew, and we still have a lot of clarity. We really have more effectiveness at night now than we do during the day because of this technology. But, so these are some of the major missions we perform on a daily, nightly basis, and I've got a couple videos I'd like to show you that highlight some of these missions. Okay. The first one is a pursuit that happened down in the Rio Grande Valley on US 281. It was a load vehicle with illegals. A trooper attempted to make a traffic stop. As soon as that attempt was made, the load vehicle did a 180, and now it's heading back to the river. And then the air crew came on scene.
About a mile from 2812.
We're still south on 3-1 mile from 2812.
Past the spikes, can't see if he hit them.
Lights on now.
Okay, his lights on. He was at 1050. He's airborne.
Okay, so you can see there's a lot of risks that our troopers face on a daily, nightly basis. That guy was blacked out until the very last minute there. The good thing about having an air crew overhead is it allows the troopers to back off a little bit and mitigate some of that risk. But unfortunately, a lot of these drivers are really young and they make really bad decisions, as was evident here. This incident here was an armed robbery that occurred in Dallas. And the suspect had managed to avoid capture, and the air crew was called in, and we were able to locate him in the backyard of a residence. And this video shows the air crew guiding the ground units in along with a canine.
Watch it, guys, coming up right there. Hold what you got right there. It's right in front of you guys. Jeremy, right in front of you, to your right, there's a little bitty shed right there in front of the corner. He's in between that shed and the fence. All right, he's looking at you guys right now in front of that car. Watch his hands. I don't know what he's doing. To the left of the car. There he is. Canine's going for the bite. Canine's got a bite.
Okay, so potentially a very dangerous situation. The air crew was able to call out potential risks. The officers, you have to imagine, this is at night. They cannot see what's going on. They cannot see over the fence. So the air crew can really make a difference in making a successful arrest. Here's some statistics over the last couple years. The last 2 years have been the busiest AODs ever been. In 20 and 21, over 13,000 flat hours per year was a record by far for us. Over 7,900 agency assists per year. And an agency assist is really a true metric for our work. And of note, over 80% of these agency assists are not DPS. They're other than DPS agencies. They're local, they're county, other state agencies, all the federal agencies are who we're assisting on a daily basis. And then you can see the number of apprehensions almost tripled from 20 to 21. And that's just a direct indication of what we have going on at the border. Okay. And speaking of the border, OLS support, on any given day, we have 6 to 8 aircraft assigned to the Lone Star mission, over 5,000 flat hours in the last year. I'm highlighting the Big Bend region because that's where these pictures are from, because we've seen a big uptick in the amount of activity over the last few months. And the Big Bend is a totally different environment than Rio Grande Valley. In the valley, minutes matter because illegals can cross and quickly get into a populated area or get on a highway. But out here in Big Bend, things are measured in hours and days, and everything's based off of a sensor hit. Once a sensor gets hit, the Border Patrol or our tracking guys, they know where these groups are pretty much heading. And so they'll plan a day or two ahead and we'll insert tracking teams via helicopter or four-wheeler, and then they'll start cutting sign on the groups. And you can see on the picture on the right there, the determination of these guys. Those are hand-sewn straps on those 40 to 60 pound burlap, that's all marijuana. And they've been carrying that for miles, for days and days. So it tells you they're a very determined individual. Okay. So this video here is a real quick video of an apprehension out in the Big Bend. The air crew is guiding in Border Patrol. Now this is at night and the terrain is very rugged. So you'll see as the Border Patrol approaches, there's gonna be a smaller group that surrenders immediately, but then there's another group very determined that's gonna attempt to evade capture. Yeah, so that group, that will take all night to clean up. I mean, eventually we'll catch them, but if you've ever been to the Big Bend, it's just very tough terrain. Everything's got something sharp sticking out of it. So it's a difficult working environment. So DPS also has a very robust search and rescue capability. We have 6 hoist-equipped helicopters, and then we include the Game Wardens as our 7th one because they have a very similar equipped helicopter to ours, and we work hand-in-hand with the Game Wardens. The picture on the left, that's from Hurricane Harvey. We had over 300 rescues in the week following the Harvey landfall. And the picture on the right is rescuing 2 victims from the Llano River following a flood. That was a couple summers ago. What's unique about this is that's a DPS helicopter, DPS hoist operator with a Game Warden rescue swimmer. Just 2 weeks ago out in Big Bend, we had a gentleman that had fallen about 100 feet into a ravine while hiking in the Big Bend Park, and he broke his femur. And his son had walked out 20 miles to get cell reception to contact us. And just luckily, we had a hoist-equipped helicopter working near Sanderson. It was the Game Warden helicopter. But with the Game Warden pilot and the DPS hoist operator, we were able to go locate the victim and make the rescue. So it really shows a good a testament to the cooperation we have with our Game Warden brothers.
Of the 15 helicopter, that's right, 15 is the right count.
Yes, sir.
How many of those are not capable of using a hoist?
So currently we have 6, so 9 are not hoist equipped.
They can still use a cable and drag people.
We call that long line.
Yeah, but not,
it's
have
not
the
preferred cable. Method. Yeah. Hoisting is a lot safer.
Yes.
And that number will hopefully change in the next year or so with the TAG initiative that we hope to see additional aircraft, and we hope to also see additional aircraft from Houston PD. So if that occurs, we could be up to 10 hoist-equipped helicopters by next year. Yeah. Next slide, please. So we also have a special mission capability. This is what's called a fast rope, or it's an insertion system. We work with several SWAT teams around the state, and in this case, this is the Texas Army National Guard Special Operations guys as they're getting ready to deploy to Operation Lone Star. Okay. So we have an outstanding training team. My safety training officer is Major Brian Cobb. He and his staff are responsible for recurrency check rides, the standardization. We also have a safety committee that's led by Captain Jorge Rodriguez. They meet quarterly, and they analyze any mishaps or incidents that have occurred, not only in the division, but across public safety, aviation, around the world. And then we make recommendations and changes based on that analysis. We're also going through an external audit. It's for our accreditation. This is the second one we've been through, and it ensures that we're following the best industry practices and that our policies and procedures are where they need to be. Okay. So the UAS team, this program has exploded in the last 4 years, especially the last 3 years. We currently have over 200 drone pilots, and I use the term UAS, which is unmanned aerial system, drone, are kind of used interchangeably. And I made this presentation a couple weeks ago, so that 240 is already wrong because we now have over 250 UAS systems in the department. 25,000 flights and 5,000 hours in 2021 alone, and half of those were in support of OLS. So currently the Rangers, Highway Patrol, CID all operate drones, and after discussions with the directors over the last few weeks, AOD is going to take a more robust role in the operational piece of the program. We're looking at hiring full-time drone pilots, because right now all the drone pilots, this is an additional duty. So we're looking at full-time guys, and then more of a standardization of the fleet and a long-term procurement program. Okay. So this is in conclusion, I'd really like to thank the commission for all your support of AOD. And I'd like to thank the director and the deputy directors for your support. Aviation is inherently very risky and also inherently very expensive. So there's no way we could do this without your support. So we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Tim. That was a great report, as always. And we've seen firsthand the wonderful work of the aircraft division and the I will say, over the 8-plus years I've been on the commission, just the build-out of the entire division in terms of equipment and personnel has been nothing short of remarkable. And I'm very thankful to the legislature and the governor for having the foresight to provide this important equipment to the department.
Thank you very much.
Commissioners, any questions?
Yeah, I would like to just make a comment. Thanks, Chief, for your presentation. It was comprehensive, as always, and having seen firsthand the Mesquite outfit. And I also want to thank the governor and the legislature for providing y'all what I view as an essential weapon in the fight to keep law enforcement strong in the state of Texas. It's absolutely essential to the mission, and thank you for all the good work you and your team do.
Appreciate it.
Yep, I'd echo those comments. It's great to live in a state where the political leaders, governor and the legislature, understand the job of keeping the people of Texas protected and safe. And thanks for all the work you do. Thanks for the resources that they provide to allow us to add the additional assets through the air to do the job that we do across the state, and especially at this time on the border. Let me ask, what type of federal assets in the air are on the border? And if you know, and how much collaboration is there? And well, I'll leave it at that. I could make more comments, but let me leave it at that.
So we enjoy a great relationship with CBP Aviation. They have, every sector has their own mini Air Force, McAllen, Laredo, Del Rio, the Big Bend, El Paso. A lot of assets. The problem that the CBP has right now is the number of flat hours given to them. So we've seen a lot of hangar doors closed and a lot of not flying going on over the last year or 2 years. So they have the assets. It's just the ability to fly them. There's also the Army National Guard has sent federalized guardsmen to the border to assist with Border Patrol, and they're located in Laredo, and there's six Lakotas, which is the same thing as our EC-145, and they do fly quite a bit. So that is a great asset.
Okay, so does it seem that there are limitations on the hours of some of the federal assets, yes, even though there's equipment down there and person power to operate it further?
That's right.
Okay, great. But to the extent possible, we collaborate and work with our federal partners to get the job done. We understand we're at the tip of the spear.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
No, we really do enjoy a good relationship. We share intelligence. We work with their ground units extensively. It's a good relationship that we have.
Okay. Thank you. Good report. Appreciate all the work you and your division do.
Thank you.
Yes, briefly, Chairman, thank you. I also echo a great report. Thank you for that. I often say about DPS in general to folks in the general public that they have no idea what goes on every day in this state that never gets reported or sees the light of day outside of this this organization. And aircraft is no different. And having been down there for a simple day with you guys in the border area, it is truly amazing what you encounter, what you operate, and the service that you provide every day. And we really, really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Director, anything You want to add to that?
Well, I do. Yeah, if you don't mind, Chairman. Well, first, as we introduce the particular program and its importance, especially in today's threat environment, it's also important to recognize, and as the Chief noted, is that most of those assists are at other agencies. It's imperative that the law enforcement community in Texas, it doesn't matter if you have 10 officers or you have 5,000 officers, that you have aircraft support. In terms of the targets that we deal with today and the complexity and the fast movement, and to be able to do it safely and securely, it's essential to have that capability. And many of the tactical flight officers, I think I'll refer to the Chief, you know, there are actually local agencies. He disappeared on me, huh? There you are. How many? Hey, Chief, come on back up here for a second.
Yeah, you're not done.
He bailed on me. He said nice things about the Chiefs, and then he jumps the ship. But how many tactical flight officers from other agencies do we have?
Yeah, currently I have 7.
So that's something else.
And I should add that the Highway Patrol is assisting us a great deal as well.
Yeah. So that those tactical flight officers are so important. As you heard the description in terms of calling out the individual, being able to use the police communications, knowing the area of operation, and being able to immediately plug in in that environment, it really helps to have a law enforcement expert that's one of their high performers that they provide us to as a tactical flight officer. So really, it's a team sport. And what's incredibly important, he mentioned safety, but you can't say safety enough times as it relates to an elite aircraft program. You have to deal with the safety, your pilots, and your equipment. Plain and simple, there's just too many catastrophic things can happen, especially, you know, helicopters don't glide very well. And we can't afford to lose life while we're trying to save life. And so it's important to have that. And I applaud the Chief in maintaining that, always seeking accreditations at the highest level. Absolutely important. And that we continue on our program because they depend so much upon us, not just for border operations, but statewide, not just the Department of Public Safety and all our particular elements, but the entire state. So I commend him and his men and women. And of course, as to the point said earlier, the state legislature and the governor have been absolutely committed to the program and dedicating resources. And actually, a lot of our support is from local agencies. And we're asking what we need. When they talk to their members, they want to make sure that this is one of those adequate areas we're funded in. Just like our laboratory division, we provide such a great service to the community. So, Chief, anything else?
No, sir.
Okay. Then you're free to go.
Thank you.
The chairman excuses you.
Thank you, Chief, for that report.
Just a little quick, I think the governor did a great job of highlighting some of the challenges of the state of Texas, and certainly the commission knows it very well. We've talked about it before. Anytime you put 1.3 million people into Texas that are here illegally and that enter illegally between the ports of entry and within a one-year calendar year, in the history of Texas has never been a larger number, almost twofold what it was back in 1986. Immediately, the U.S. Border Patrol, brave men and women, close working partners, they're overwhelmed entirely. They become, and essentially, processing and detention becomes their duty. They're no longer on the river. They're off the river. They're no longer protecting Texas and the nation. They're actually processing people. And that trend is continuing. And a concern certainly the governor has, the legislature has, I know you have, in terms of how can Texas lean forward to be proactive. Because when we, at the end of the day, as long as transnational criminal activity comes between the ports. When Border Patrol is off the line, we've got cartel operatives, MS-13 he mentioned. There's also MS-18. He talked about criminals that have been previously convicted and deported from the United States into it. All of these things are happening, not to mention fentanyl, cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, drugs that are pouring into our areas and don't stay in the border but move into the transshipment centers and throughout Texas and throughout the nation. So being proactive in that regard is a part of Operation Lone Star, and the goal of it, as we've talked before, is really to prevent transnational criminal activity and also to detect and interdict it between the ports of entry. Now, ideally, prevention in law enforcement, that's always our highest standard and measure. It's hard to translate to the media sometimes because it's not sexy, it's not numbers along the, but at the end of the day, our profession is really about the absence of crime and disorder, and that's our goal. We don't want it to come across between the ports of entry. We want to shut it down. So zero is the right number that we always strive for. And that's the same thing with crashes. We don't want fatalities at the end of the day. And the bottom line, those are the things that matter from a Texas standpoint. At the same point, it's important to capture data. And you know, we have and continue to do so, mindful of our legislators and looking for outputs and things like that so we can report. We've adopted a process, you know, recognizing that it's an evolving process, not unlike uniform crime reporting, is that you have to go back and keep, you know, refreshing the data and ensuring that the data you're capturing is actually what you say it is. And we take great pride in the great job that ICT, the Intelligence and Counterterrorism Division, does, establishing priority information requirements for the governor, the legislature, and the forefront so we can collect the information they need. So when they look at it in terms of return on investment, in terms of the department's productivity along those lines, and some of the elements that we've captured and share weekly with the leadership is, for example, you know, criminal arrests in the Department of Public Safety. We've exceeded over 13,000, you know, criminal arrests since Operation Lone Star began in March of 2021. Criminal trespass arrests in that program, over 3,000. In fact, over 3,400. Felony charges, over 11,000 felony charges. As it relates to misdemeanors, 8,700. Federal charges, over 907. We've referred, just to the Department of Public Safety, over 99,000 illegal immigrants that we came in contact with that were, and ours, the one we come in contact aren't give-ups. I mean, they're not surrenders. They're individuals trying to get away. And if not for the department, would have gotten away. And we've referred over 99,000 of those to the U.S. Border Patrol. Our Texas military forces, they've referred over 127,000 of the U.S. Border Patrol. So that's clearly the state stepping in and providing that gap where Border Patrol has left right now. Marijuana. We've got over six tons of marijuana seized, over a ton of cocaine, over 5 tons of methamphetamine, 41 pounds of heroin, 187 pounds of fentanyl, which doesn't sound like much until you translate it into 42 million lethal doses. And that's what the governor was talking about in terms of it. And if you look outside of currency, you know, $9 million, 788 firearms. If you look outside the area of operation, because, as you know, troopers are along the corridors. And we've got these criminal corridors. They're not trying to keep the drugs there. They're keeping it, they're moving it along those areas. And troopers are very active, not just in terms of the area of operation, but active along those corridors. So you look at, and so are special agents, you know, focusing on the criminal networks that are bringing the cocaine, methamphetamine, fentanyl into the country. And if you just look outside the area of operation for the same time period, we had over 14,000 pounds of marijuana, you know, half a ton of cocaine, but we had, you know, 8 tons of methamphetamine that were seized. And this is not that methamphetamine of old. This is methamphetamine that's been produced in factories, and it's highly pure and very addictive and highly dangerous. Over 200 pounds of heroin and over 1,127 pounds of fentanyl, which is 255 million lethal doses, over lethal doses of fentanyl. Just this is DPS. This is not no other agency. And another $19 million in cash seized throughout the corridor. So clearly, you know, we're proactive in terms of doing what the governor asked us to do, detect and interdict it, and we're certainly doing that. But importantly, preventing is one of the key factors, and that's something we're mindful of and how we can be proactive in securing zones along the way, along the corridors in that regard. One of the operations in terms, it's not just it's public safety, it's all crime all the time, and one of those things, and certainly has been getting some attention lately, is in terms of our commercial vehicle enforcement program and highway patrol. And how important that is, and people sometimes don't recognize. And if you look at the numbers, you know, it's one thing we're not proud of in Texas. We like being number one in everything, but not creeping up over 4,000 fatal accidents that we've crashes that we've had in 2021. That's not one number we're really proud of, and we recognize it's moved up. And 21% of those, a 21% increase in those were commercial vehicle related. So one thing we captured in our dashboard, and you know it, is we put in our performance measures when we talk about how we patrol, we talk about safety and being proactive, is taking off, you know, identifying unsafe commercial vehicles on the road and unsafe commercial vehicle drivers and remove them from the roadway. And that's really what we're doing at the international ports of entry, is we've increased at 7 different locations based upon priorities in terms of numbers of CV traffic coming in those areas. And we were able to do that. We've been proactive in that. And since then, you know, since we began, you know, operations, or really just, you know, as of April 12th, the numbers are, you know, they were troopers inspected over 4,100 commercial vehicles during that period of time. Over 973 vehicles have been taken out of service. And what does that mean? That means defective brakes, defective tires, things that, you know, things that puts that vehicle at risk of having a crash. And as we know, when you got 80,000 pounds of commercial vehicle going down a highway and they get a crash, bad things happen. Even if the driver is safe, that vehicle's unsafe. We're cognizant of it and certainly concerned about that particular enforcement operations. And so we're proud of what they've been able to do in such a short period of time with over 13,000 violations of law that they found, but 973 they've had put out of vehicles they've put out of service. So we'll continue to be proactive in Operation Lone Star. The governor and legislature directed to be very clear about us doing it. And of course, yesterday, it's important to note that the governor of Coahuila, Nuevo León, has agreed to work with us. And I know the governor's moving along and talking to other governors, and that's important because what happens in Mexico, you know, impacts us here. And we've already seen we've gotten some cooperation based on individuals, cartels specifically, Gulf cartels specifically, even more specifically, in the Starr County area shooting at National Guard and Border Patrol agents, being able to make some phone calls and get a quick action response, a quick force response, you know, from the government of Tamaulipas. Very important to do that. And of course, they've been... We recognize the importance of that cooperation, and that concludes my briefing on Operation Lone Star and my director's report. Questions?
Any questions for the director? Yes, Chairman. One follow-up question. In terms of the additional data and intel that we're able to obtain with the expanded air operations, focusing on those cameras on the aircraft, the additional drones, some full-time drone operators, a lot of data that can help us do a lot of things, including preclude crimes as well as catch the criminals, the perpetrators. When you get a lot of information, you've got to figure out what to do with it. Got to have folks to analyze it. Do we need additional resources to analyze the additional data that we are able to gather and are gathering from our air operations?
Well, not just air operations, just the data itself across the entire spectrum, threat spectrum, because it's important to do all source analysis, to your point, Commissioner. And you need smart people, and certainly they need to be smarter than the director. And now someone said that's the bar is not very high. We need to set the bar higher than that. But we've got professional analysts that we have. And really you recognize today this group called the BSOC and JOIX is just an absolute recognition of what you said. It's men and women dedicated full-time to the intelligence process. Sometimes it's very active, meaning monitoring cameras where it's real-time and situational awareness, and not to mention in terms of collecting these BOSAs that you've seen weekly produced. That's the group that produces them. In other words, someone's got to capture from all the different agencies these border incidents and then take those border instances and consolidate it with by sector and be able to provide some descriptive along those lines and have a disciplined process or a systematic process of collecting that. Well, that's what the JOIX do. That's what the BSOC does and produces. It puts us in a position now when I go talk to the governor or other policymakers, we know the situational awareness of what's going on in the Big Bend area. We know what's going on. We can discuss Rio Grande Valley. We can discuss numbers along those lines, and not just in terms of IA apprehensions, but in terms of drug seizures and along those, and identify hot spots, weak points, where we can make decisions in terms of allocating resources. So at the end of the day, though, there's a lot of, we're being asked to do a lot by policymakers in terms of having an accurate understanding of the current and future threat environment. So there is a need for additional analytical personnel, and the department is looking at ways we can capture that. And actually, if we can tie it to a cost module that if so many troopers, okay, so many rangers, so many special agents require this type of support. And that's an ideal situation to be able to do it that way. So we recognize there's an, you know, if you're going to, it's a trooper needs information, okay, doesn't need just a pistol, but also needs not just information, but analyzed information. So to the extent that we have that, that's we're mindful of it. And I think we're already planning to have that built into some of the requests that we have for exceptional items to come before you.
Any other comments?
Well, thank you, Director, to you and the entire DPS team for Operation Lone Star, the work that's being done there. It is, if there could be more than 24 hours in a day, 25 hours in a day, you're putting it in, you and the entire team, along with the governor, who's been really completely plugged in on this, and we're very fortunate to have that degree of attention to a very critical issue. As we talked about with metrics, it's hard to get a beat on what it would look like if we weren't there. But I can assure you, if we weren't there, it would be a total mess. It already is, but it would be unbelievable. And so thank you for all that's being done to protect everyone along the border.
Thank you, sir. And as you know, it's a great sacrifice to our people and men and women. As you know, the hours that they put in and these multiple deployments that must be sustained, and is, you know, we don't do collective bargaining like other agencies. Bottom line is, hey, you get in your patrol car, go south when you're called. And our men and women do it. They don't complain about it. They get it done. And again and again and again. So we're always warned about sustainability and how to modify schedules to optimize their capability so we can maintain the same tempo around the clock. At the same point, knowing that this is not going away anytime soon. I think that anybody that has any situational awareness of the issue right now, I'm afraid it's going to take, you know, we're not where we need to be on a federal standpoint, and it's clear that the people of Texas and the governor, the legislature, expects us to do something about it, which means it's going to require more sacrifice by our people, especially in light of the elimination of Title 42. And the predictions by CBP, DHS, and our federal partners in terms of what might happen when the Title 42 exemption is eliminated.
Thank you. Before we move on to new business, I want to recognize representatives from the legislature and Governor Abbott and Governor Patrick's offices who are here with us today. We have Katie Fallon-Brown from LBB. We have Susan Makoviak from the Lieutenant Governor Patrick's office. And Michael Hull from the Governor Abbott's office was with us earlier today and I believe is online now. And also joining us online, we have Aaron Monsabiaz from the Lieutenant Governor Patrick's office. So thank you for being here today. Go over to new business, item 8 on the agenda. Section A, report, discussion, and possible action on the following rule proposals for publication, receive public comment. Item 1 is proposed amendments to 37 TAC section 16.31 concerning third-party skills testing program, and Chief Sherry Gibson will give that report. Chief.
Good morning. So amending section 16.31 updates the rule related to third-party skills testing in compliance with federal regulations. It will allow those providers to administer the written tests and the knowledge exams in addition to the skills test. So we're requesting approval for posting in Texas Register for that item. Number 8A1.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to post amendments to 37 TAC section 16.31 concerning third-party skills testing program. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief. And if you'll keep your seat because we're coming right back to you. Item B under new business intelligence threat briefing. We'll handle that in executive session. And moving on to ongoing business, section 9. A, report, discussion, possible adoption of the following previously published rules. And I'll turn that over to you for items 1 through 4.
Is it on now?
And it's Chief Gibson is giving this report.
Yeah, Chief Sherry Gibson, Driver License Division. So item 9A1 added 15.149, which requires companies who purchase driver record information from the department to delete that information once they are no longer authorized to possess it, and that was in compliance with Senate Bill 15. There were no comments. That rule was posted, and there were no comments. Item 9A2 was to repeal 16.22, which was information in a commercial driver license requirements, and those in the information in that rule were combined into 16.26 and 16.29. There were no comments on that item. Item 9A3 was amending 16.26 regarding CL written exams. This has to do with the waiver of exams for military individuals who have commercial motor vehicle experience. Item 9A4 was amending 16.29, which amends the rule that allows the skills exam to be waived for individuals who meet certain military criteria. The division is requesting adoption of items 9A1 through 9A4.
Did items 3 and 4 have any comments?
Oh, I apologize. None of them had comments. Okay.
I'll move that we approve items 9A, 1, 2, 3, and 4 concerning the amendments to 37 TAC.
I'll second the motion, and I have a question briefly, Chairman.
All right, motion has been made and seconded. Commissioner Wainwright has a question.
Chief Gibson, on 9A1 involving 37 TAC, section 15.149, concerning deleting personal information when the recipient is no longer authorized, what's the enforcement mechanism for that requirement?
If they fail to do it, they'll be in violation of the contract that they signed with the agency, so there can be penalties applied to that company if they refuse to delete the information.
Monetary penalties?
I believe so, yes, sir.
Okay. Okay.
I can double check and get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions or discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Blair has made a motion, and Commissioner Wainwright has seconded the motion to approve under our agenda Section 9 ongoing business, Item A 1 through 4, amendments to 37 TAC section. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief. Item B, under ongoing business, report, discuss, and possible action regarding the modification of the DPS organizational structure and the appointment, promotion, ratification, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a member of the department or commission management team. Director McCraw, do you have anything for us?
Yes, I do, Chairman, Commissioners. With the retirement of Maureen Coulihan, the Assistant Chief in the Finance Division, she is retiring, effective March 31st. And with your advice and consent, we'd like to name Vanessa Mayo as a new chief, assistant chief for finance, effective May 1st, 2020. She's here today. She currently is employed by the TABC, Texas Alcohol Beverage Commission. We're unashamed about going after talent at other agencies, as you know. In fact, she's our chief financial officer at TABC. So we certainly welcome her and look forward to being on the team. And if she doesn't mind coming up, introducing herself to the commission, I would appreciate it. I don't think I told her about this, but this is always good training for the future. Okay.
He did say I start May 1st. So,
yes.
good morning, Chairman, members. My name is Vanessa Mayo. I do currently work at TABC, the Alcohol Beverage Commission, as the Chief Financial Officer. And I was lucky enough to get offered the Assistant Chief position in finance to work with Ms. Susie Whittington. And I'm very excited to be here. So thank you.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion, and I would also make a motion that we approve and also comment, good raid.
Thank you.
I second the motion.
We have a motion made by Commissioner Blair and a second made by Commissioner Wainwright to appoint Vanessa Mayo as the Assistant Chief of Finance Administration for the Department of Public Safety. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Congratulations.
Chairman, I know that you have a relationship with the chairman of the TABC, and I thought maybe perhaps you might want to make that call.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll call him later today. Okay, I do want to say at the Racing Commission, we have a new executive director, Amy Cook, who is it's her stated goal to become the number one best agency in the state of Texas. And I've informed her we're not willing to give up that spot yet. So
yes, the racing, what is that? Oh, I'm sorry. Who did that?
Anyway, she's doing a wonderful job over there and should be commended for her hard work. But she it will be very difficult to become the number one state agency in the state of Texas since that spot is already taken. Yes, sir. All right, moving on. Any other items, Director?
No,
sir. Okay. Under ongoing business, item C, report discussion possible action regarding ongoing criminal investigations pursuant to Government Code Section 411.0041. We will handle that in an executive session. Are there any commission members wishing to give a report? No commission members. I will note that Chairman James White from the House of Representatives has joined us online as well. Welcome, Chairman. Move on to finance report. Susie, do you have a report for us today?
I do not.
Chief Auditor's report. Chief Melvin, any report? Any division status reports? Moving on to consent items, item 11 on the agenda. Colonel Mathis, are there any amendments to the consent items?
No, there are not.
I would entertain a motion to approve the consent items.
I so move, Mr. Chairman.
I second.
Good we job. Have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to approve all items under Section 11 of the agenda consent items. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Item 12, items for future agenda. Commissioners, please let General Atkins or Sophie know if you have any items to be included in the next meeting agenda. Moving on to 13, date for future meeting. The regular Public Safety Commission meeting is scheduled for June 9th, 2022. Discharge hearings will be scheduled for June 10th, 2022. The Public Safety Commission will now go into closed session at this time pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, Chapter 551, to consider matters authorized to be considered in executive session under Government Code Section 551.0710720730740076 and Government Code Section 411.0041. The time is 11:26 a.m. The Public Safety Commission has ended a closed session and is now reconvened as a quorum and open session. The time is 1:50 p.m. If there's no further business, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Blair to adjourn. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same aye. Sign. We are adjourned. Thank you.
I think we had a record today, the number of